everybody. What's up? What's up? It's Michael Steele. Welcome to the Michael Steele Podcast. Yes, I'm Michael Steele. And we are now past Labor Day, baby. That means that campaign time is in full swing. And there's been a whole lot of ish that's been happening. Revelations by Bob Woodward with recorded conversation with the president, and certainly the president's views about our military men and women and their service to the nation. Protests still burning pretty hot in places around the country. And we are, folks, literally 1 week out from the first ballots being cast in this 2020 presidential election as states begin to open their doors to early voting. And I thought it would be important to get someone who has been not just in the mix of this, but really one of the architects of our national effort around voting. Began with work in the overseas balloting process, and we'll talk a little bit about that. And now I'm dealing with a lot of our domestic work. And as I have the honor of working with her as chairman of the U.S. Vote Foundation, but she has been its president, executive director, bottle washer, paper hanger from the very beginning. And now, so we're going to have some fun here because Susan has this wild, wonderful, very European last name that everyone just has fun trying to pronounce, but I'm not gonna do it. I'm gonna let her do it. But we all know her affectionately as Susan. I get the Suyant at the end, but it's that close. She just gave me this look. Susan, welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Michael, thank you so much. And I will say my name just for the, sheer record. Entertainment value. Luckily, it can be erased from the recording if necessary, but it is Susan Jędrzejczyk-Swina. And if you're by some chance Polish, that is completely recognizable. It's like Smith over there. It means nothing here. But
could you
I'm
say
talking
one
to
more
you
time? So because I always feel embarrassed when I have to introduce Susan, and I'm like, yeah, this is Susan, and she says, I got it from here.
Well, you can just say Swina, which is a French part, and Jędrzejczyk-Swina is the Polish
Jędrzejczyk-Swina.
Part.
Jędrzejczyk-Swina.
Yes,
it's a beautiful name. It really is, but it's a mouthful. But I'm glad you're here, and I'm not here because I don't have you here because of your last name. I have you here because of your expertise, and I really want to take this time together, Susan, to inform, educate, and sort of have you, in one sense, sort of put out there answers to questions that you've been hearing. Because we had our board meeting recently, Susan was talking about the fact, yeah, you know, I'm kind of manning the help desk and getting all these questions from people. So first off, tell us a little bit about the foundation, the work that you've been involved in from the very beginning, particularly in the overseas balloting part of the program that really kind of founded, which was then overseas vote by, you know, overseas vote. That U.S. Vote created. Talk a little bit about that, and then we'll get into some more interesting things.
Thank you so much. I think probably the best way to do this is through a little story, because storytelling is just, you know, it's a good way to get this all out in a more enjoyable manner.
Right.
It was about 16 years ago, actually. It was 2004 when I thought, things are kind of a little bit funny back in the U.S. I was living in Munich. I'm mm-hmm. here now.
Right.
Full disclosure, I am an overseas voter, and I firmly believe that our voting program from overseas is almost, I dare say, easier than voting absentee in the U.S. For a number of reasons. Some of them primarily because of the work we did, which spearheaded reform that went through in 2009 and really modernized the program. Anyway, when I got into it, I contacted a friend and said, I'd like to get people involved in voting from overseas. Can you help me? And he said, well, yeah, sure. Just come on by and pick up the materials. So I did that, and he handed me a 400-page instruction book and a stack of blurry forms.
How to vote. Yeah, here's 400 pages. Read through this and then go vote.
That's exactly what he said. He said, have them fill out this form, and if you have any questions, read this book. Well, long story short, I memorized the book. I had to, because you just didn't have time to do it any other way. So there I was on my Sunday afternoons with a friend of mine from IBM, actually. Not that I worked there. He was just a colleague and another American living here. And we were setting up the table, you know, spending time away from our families, thinking we would get people signed up. And, you know, after a while, I just said, this is really stupid. What are we doing?
We're
registering like 1.5 voters an hour.
Right, you set up at their version of Walmart, right? Sitting there waiting for somebody to show up.
Exactly. I said, there's got to be a better way. And how stupid are we? Why didn't we look online? So I went to look online, and I found this black and white PowerPoint. And the exciting pages had pictures of trucks delivering things. I mean, this was the worst thing. It was given out by the federal government at the time. They would just push that program by showing, they basically did a worldwide tour. They had to stay in Paris and other fine capitals of the world to train people how to register to vote with this 400-page instruction book. We went, hey, look, bing, there's another way to do this. We can automate this online. So I became the first person to ever put this process online. Not that I programmed it myself. I always have a team of people that I direct to do those things. But I can say that this is a little thing you might not have known about me, Michael, but I used to work in architecture. So in order to design the system, I studied the book, and then I drew on one piece of paper every possible 50-state flow with the exceptions onto one piece of paper. And when I took it to the developer team, I pinned it up on the wall, and I said, this is what we're going to build. And that is what we built. We basically designed a system that you could enter into online no matter what the situation was. You would come out the other end with a completed form with instructions and with the address of where to send the form. So that was the beginning of Overseas Vote. And in the we had no idea what we were getting into. Honestly, people thought maybe 500 people would use it. But this site was absolutely stormed. It was stormed. It was brought to its knees many, many times. But after the election, I got together with a couple of the people, and we said, let's do this right. Let's make a nonprofit. And we set up Overseas Vote Foundation at that point. That existed for a number of years until we literally ran out of problems to solve. We were using technology to streamline all these problems, like finding the correct election office or figuring out your dates and deadlines for your state election, or... And, you know, it turned out that Congress was very interested, and they still are. And I think that's one point of bipartisan meeting in our country that still exists, is that the overseas and military voting program is something that Congress does like to address. It is a feather in their caps. It does work very well. And in 2009, the Military and Overseas Voter Empowerment Act was established that went on top of the Uniformed and Overseas Citizens Absentee Voting Act. It refined that a little bit. It modernized it. They used a lot of the technology that we had created as an example of what the states really should do. Mm-hmm. So what we did set the stage for Congress saying, hey, states, you really ought to do this, this, and this. So now overseas voters have a lot of benefits. We can use an online system to generate our forms. We can request blank ballots to be delivered online. It is absolutely the law that every state must provide that option, which is really coming in handy now because of the Postal Service falling flat. And a lot of the states also offer online services for, you know, checking where your ballot is, checking your registration status. It all starts to add up. Some states even allow online ballot return. It could be through a portal that the state has. It could be through an email attachment. So some voters will be able to go through this process from overseas without using the post at all this year. That's a major
I don't want to get lost on you know, the friends who are listening to this, that what you did back in 2004 based on your own desire to vote and then looking at a 400-page manual and said, oh, okay, so this is how I'm supposed to vote living in Germany, that you were able to translate that into Overseas Vote Foundation, that then would become the architect of what the federal government would then create for overseas voting, so that not just, you know, expats like yourself, but military personnel who are stationed abroad would now have a, to use a term which was probably kind of really kitschy cool back in the day, a streamlined way of getting the vote. They didn't have to go through 400 pages or understand 400 pages of bureaucratic gobbledygook in order to cast a ballot for president or any other office. That's
right.
That's an amazing feat. And ladies and gentlemen, a woman out of, as we've seen throughout our history, out of necessity came up with a way to fix the problem. I mean, that's just an amazing, I just don't want that to get lost, because it's, you know, a lot of times people think that these structures and these programs and institutions have always been there. And you're saying, no, that's not how it was.
You know, there's not a lot of good news these days, but I think we can use this point to just say this illustrates one of the good things about America, mm-hmm. is that as an individual, if you see a better way of doing things, you're allowed to do it.
Yeah.
In a lot of countries, a government process or voting and elections might be considered 100% government process and keep your mind in your own beeswax.
Right.
No. In the U.S., you can actually set a positive example that will get noticed by the government and used to improve it, at least certain administrations.
Right. So, yeah, and we'll get to that in a second, because there have been and still are obstructions that we've been fighting, you as president of US Vote Foundation have been fighting. How does Overseas Vote Foundation become US Vote Foundation, and what was the trigger that said, yeah, we need to do this at home?
Well, to be honest, like I said, the reform package passed and things had gotten much better. There were little nitpicky things which are being dealt with now state by state domestically, like witness requirements, notary requirements. Those are magnificently difficult, exponentially more difficult from overseas. You know, getting a notary to sign a document that's in another language means it has to be translated and every word has to be confirmed.
Right.
That is widely different. Anyway, those things all got handled in the reform package. And I'm from the tech industry, by the way. I really don't have an elections background. I've kind of learned it as I went along.
Right.
I won't claim that I'm a political person or trained election administrator. It's just, you know, pulling yourself up by your own bootstraps and really studying things. I'm quite careful.
Like how we vote, right.
Yeah,
right.
Complying with the rules. Anyway, I have a tendency to always think, okay, let's look forward. which horse has been let out of the barn and how do we get to be the next horse in front of it. So that's what happened. I mean, I saw that I was running out of problems to solve. And in order to take the foundation the next step further, we needed to go into, and we were ready to go into new areas. So the two areas that we chose at that point, one, I looked at the US and went, what websites exist that have the same comprehensive set of services? Because our website was designed to do one thing well. That's just a precept, a premise I have about how to approach things. If you can do one thing well, and you really, that's not so easy. You have to avoid people saying, hey, you're really good at this. Why don't you do that? That sort of line extension, you know, is it's really tempting. You have to say no to that to succeed at any one thing. And, but looking at the US again, saying, oh, has anybody here got the same comprehensive services that we have for overseas voters? When they land on our website, they know it's for them and they don't have to go anywhere else. They don't have to search the web for any other sites. Did that exist in the US? No, not in the same form. And because we had technically solved the problem of how to generate many, many different types of output, state-specific output, we said, okay, now we can bring this solution that we have for overseas voters into the domestic realm. So we automated every single state absentee ballot request process, the domestic, and we decided we would take our work at tracking the moving parts of elections. It's very dynamic, dates, deadlines. These are all very granular things and they change all the time. Even you might think that today's election dates and deadlines are fixed state by state. They're changing all the time. Every week we have changes, even right now. Even this close to the election, it's kind of crazy, but things move. So we established some ways to transfer the data that we were collecting to other organizations so they could also use it to build tools and services. Anyway, we had to change our brand. So our new parent organization became US Vote Foundation, and Overseas Vote is an initiative under that. And we still, you know, happen to be the leader in nonpartisan overseas and military voter services. You can also get them from the government or from the parties, but we do hold that position and we spearheaded that technology, brought it over to the US. And now we can safely say our election data is running the voter outreach and form generation processes for the major voter outreach organizations out there, including Rock the Vote and Vote.org, Vote America, My Move, on and on and on.
So US Vote Foundation partners with any number of other well-known, well-branded organizations out there, like Rock the Vote, for example, or the League of Women Voters, et cetera, to be sort of the backroom support for a lot of their forward initiatives. They get their followers, their fans, friends, communities to come in through their portal, and they've got the link that says, hey, if you want to get your absentee ballot, click here. That then leads through our to our network at US Vote Foundation that then launches them into their state, and then all the back-end information they need, those 400 pages, if you will, condensed to a few buttons and clicks for them to figure out how to get their request their ballot, who to send it in, what day the election is held, whether it's primary or general. So you really do provide that very necessary infrastructure to help support the citizen. There's a great slogan that we have at the U.S. Vote, and I think it's only appropriate that you, as the president, should say how we look at the citizen and their and their access to the ballot box.
We say our mission and our vision are completely united. Every citizen is a voter, and when you land on U.S. Vote Foundation, it doesn't matter what kind of voter you are. You could be an overseas voter, a military voter, a domestic polling place voter, a domestic absentee ballot vote by mail voter. Yes, and we do.
But just real clear, by polling place voter, we mean someone who actually wants to go to a polling place to vote.
Exactly,
in
because that
person.
voter would only have to register to vote and not generate a ballot request. But yes, we're kind of like an octopus. We have this resource of assets, data, and tools, and then we reach out to other voting organizations and allow them to forego doing a lot of legwork. An organization like Rock the Vote or Vote.org will use they will develop their own tools, but they'll reach into our data and take certain data points to deliver their services.
Right.
Whereas another organization like Vote Early Day, every service that they list on their site will open up a window to US Vote directly.
Mm-hmm.
So there are different ways they can do it. But yes, what's happening is that we're becoming a resource that enables a whole network of organizations to operate and reach out to voters.
That's so incredibly important, given the unfortunate immersion of politics into the voting process. Now, look, we always know that voting is a political act, but that political act has always been absent politics. In other words, it didn't matter who you were. You stated this very clearly at the beginning of our conversation. We don't care what kind of voter you are. You're a voter. So as you just noted, every citizen is a voter. Therefore, here are resources and tools that you need to engage in the franchise. In other words, to execute on the constitutional promise that you can vote. But that's not necessarily been the noise of late around voting. Could you just sort of educate and inform folks on what is this whole vote by mail thing anyway? You got what, 5 or 6 states that do it all the time? That's all they do. What are the problems there? I just tweeted, I don't know if you saw it yesterday, you know, a tweet along the lines, sort of reporting that the Heritage Foundation had found, since 1982, 1,296 instances of any kind of voter fraud. I'm saying any kind, from, you know, you tried to vote twice to, you know, you tried to impersonate somebody, whatever, any kind of voter, 1,296 cases of any
kind
of
voter. And they were looking really hard to find them.
They had looked very hard to find them since 1982. So kind of tell us, what is this whole process like for the voter? And is it fraudulent to request a vote by a ballot from your polling place or your election board of elections? And, you know, will I get in trouble if I, you know, send in a ballot but then show up to actually vote in person on election day? So let's begin to peel back some of the, I won't even say the myths, the lies, mm-hmm. and this is not on you, this is on me saying this, the lies about this voting opportunity and the truth about what the voters can and can't do.
Well, true confessions, you've never seen me dance, but when I started to see what was happening with vote by mail, I started dancing. I mean, we were really in the catbird seat here,
right,
starting off the year. And of course, oh my goodness, it got, there's, you know, a lot of water thrown on it. But listen, it's surviving nonetheless, because vote by mail is a great thing. Or absentee voting, let's call it, you know, they're
the same thing. Let's be clear about what we're
they
talking
are.
About.
It's just
absentee
the only
vote. Right.
The only difference, it's really splitting hairs, is how you request or obtain that ballot. It's
right.
not that it's a different ballot.
Right.
And I have had voters ask me or insist that they want an absentee ballot. And not a vote by mail ballot. And it's, I just don't.
Like, okay, I'll send it to
don't
you.
Go there. Right. Don't want to go there. It's really only the only difference might be in how you obtain it, request
right.
it, or whatever, or if you don't have to request it. But yeah, there. It's unfortunate that instead of using this opportunity to make voting easier for so many more people and ensure that it's safer, we ended up with a lot of confusion. As you mentioned, there are some states that automatically send a ballot to every registered voter. And with the pandemic, that number has increased.
Now, so that is because, like the District of Columbia, for example, they will send a ballot. Now, let's be clear about what we're saying, a ballot versus the application for a ballot. They will actually send you the ballot because you are what they consider a live voter, someone who is a regular, you're in their system, your information is current, you vote come election time, et cetera, correct?
Right. Well, because of the pandemic, there are a number of states, Connecticut, Vermont, New Jersey, to name a few, mm-hmm. that decided that if you're registered, they're automatically going to send you a vote by mail ballot for this election only because of the pandemic.
Right.
Understand that in America, you have to register to vote. And then on top of that, request an absentee ballot. Unlike overseas voters, we use one form and it does both of them simultaneously. There is no state in the US that gives you one form to do both simultaneously. You don't even have that option.
Right.
So it's a lot of paperwork. It's a lot of administration. And if you already know that you're going to have over 75 or 80% of the voters asking for that those ballots, and the ID check is with the registration, that's where it's really tougher. Mm-hmm. Then a ballot on top of it for a registered voter, it's probably easier for those states to just go ahead and do that. They're concerned about being able to get those ballots out on time, get voters safely voting, and to protect their staff. So there are some states that just for this election are doing automatic vote by mail for every registered voter. That doesn't mean that if a voter from New Jersey is traveling in Florida, that the ballot will go to them in Florida unless they file a ballot request. The ballot for that voter in a state where it will go to you automatically as a registered voter will be sent to your home address,
right,
unless you file a ballot request saying I am elsewhere, whether you're right, overseas or wherever. Anyway, going back to the original comment about, you know, there are certain number of states that will automatically send every registered voter a ballot by mail, which some people call universal vote by mail,
mm-hmm.
Whatever you want to call it, that is going to be a very convenient thing in this election. It is going to mean that most people in those states get their ballots earlier and on time and give them a better chance of getting those ballots back. Now, if you're not in one of those states, and there are ways to find out, don't worry about that. You know, if you go on our website and you go to usvotefoundation.org and click into like the fourth tab over on the top, there are only a few choices here because you can get everything in just a few choices. You don't need to run all over Timbuktu. Just look at voting methods and options and you'll see the different voting methods that each state has, and you'll see little special notes for some states that will tell you if you have absentee voting with an excuse, but if there's an exception. It's quite easy. So it sounds maybe a little bit complex when I explain it. When you see it, it's quite easy. I love charts. There are lots of charts. There's a chart for ballot return options without the post. There's a chart for early voting options. There's a chart for your voting methods and options, where 10 different methods for every state are yes or no. It's super easy. Mm-hmm. That's the whole thing, is it should be easy. It really isn't that complex when you straighten it out and when you make a unified process across all states. That's what our site's trying to do. We're trying to take all the 50 different ways of doing things and make it the same as much as possible for every state. Every single voter is going to be finding that they can have all the different information for their state. You're not going to be left out, not on the type of voter you are or the state. So anyway, going back to vote by mail, let's talk about that, because there are some differences. Many, many states want you to fill out a form to request your ballot, and that's very often per election.
Mm-hmm.
You'll need
a request for the primary and you'll need a request for the general.
That's right. There are, though, classifications of voters that can become permanent absentee voters. say if you're disabled and you can't leave your home.
Of a certain age, exactly.
Or,
right.
Right. So there are classifications for that. And then there are some states that give you the option to elect to become a permanent absentee voter. And that's all on the form. So what you should know, if you go to our website and you click into register to vote, absentee ballot request, you can then choose absentee ballot request and then your state and put your information in. And then it will ask you the questions that only pertain to your state. Okay. And then at the end, you're going to need to download the form and print it. And if you can't print, and you can't put it on a USB stick and take it somewhere to print, or you can't send the file you downloaded to someone else to print, then you can also call your election office and request a form. Some states sent out ballot request applications without being asked, and a lot of voters received those. You can fill those out. You know, if you receive it by post, that's fantastic. You can fill it out and send it back to your election office. All the instructions will be there with what you receive. If you download the form from our website, you'll get an instruction letter. It will tell you where exactly which election office to send it to. There are about 7,500 of those in the U.S. We're constantly every day keeping that data up to date. And we will give you contacts at your election office with their email, their phone number, their fax if they have it. Not that many people use that anymore. But anyway, right. We do have that data. Now, let's say you can't deal with any of that. You just want to call your election office. Just go into our election official directory, put in your state and your jurisdiction, and you'll have all that contact information. So, there, you know, election officials, they're great people. They yeah, really are.
They are.
And every voter has one. They work for you. You can call them with the toughest questions. We also have a voter help desk. I work it every day, not because I'm such a nice person, but I really do like helping voters.
Right.
And I like to keep my finger on the pulse. That's right. The way we hear about if something's going wrong out there. And it's how we've gotten in touch with what's going on what right is, now from another level.
On that point, what are some of the questions that you get from voters out there at the U.S. And again, the site, folks, as we're talking, is usvotefoundation.org. And as Susan said, there it's really user friendly, not a whole lot of jumping around. You know, it's really accessible. What kind of questions are you getting from voters right now, particularly in light of the recent revelations about the U.S. postal system?
Yeah, and that's a great question, because the help desk is a source of endless information, and it's amazing how the questions really do ebb and flow. They change depending what's going on. 2 weeks ago, so many of the questions were about, where's my ballot drop box?
Mm-hmm.
Do I have a ballot drop box? So we created a chart for ballot drop options, ballot return options. And voters are finding that much easier now, which is saving us a lot of questions. But it was just absolutely the hottest question of the week. And this week it switched to, can I vote early? When can I vote early? And if you go on our website, you can click into election dates and deadlines, or you can click the early voting chart, and you can find that out. Now, there's a funny thing about early voting, just to take a little side trip here.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are two terms for it. There's the term early voting, which could be right. at a specific location, and voters are asking, where do I go? The best place to check first is the local election office website. And good news for you, if you go to the election official directory and go into your jurisdiction and click on the address, you'll see the websites are given. So check the website first.
Right.
If that doesn't tell you, then you can email or call your election official. Now, some states have a statewide listing. You can also look for that. If you go into the state voting requirements, choose your state, then at the very end of the list, it says state lookup tools, and you'll see them all drop down. And some states will have a page that kind of gathers together the Dropbox locations or some information for mm-hmm. you. But there's another early voting option, which is it just has a very strange name, and that's in-person absentee voting. It's, I don't know, there's an educated term for something that is, made up of opposites. But you can't, how do you do in-person absentee of all, well, basically,
in-person absentee voting. Yeah, that's
a lot of states have it. And Virginia legally has to use that term.
I love the way you put that. Yeah, this is for those who just like opposites.
Right. So a lot of what that really means is that you can take your absentee ballot to the election office and you can vote it there. Or you can even go to the election
I've
office
actually
and
done that.
request your ballot.
I've actually done the in-person absentee ballot voting once because it was one of those things where I got the call. I had to be on the road or something, and it was last minute, and the election was like there, and I was like, okay, I gotta go. And I wound up taking the ballot in and doing the in-person absentee ballot. It was weird, kind of. You're right, though. It is really kind of a weird thing when you think about it. But yeah,
Yeah,
I've actually done that.
it's very confusing. I think a lot of this terminology is really confusing, and you should try not to get uptight about it. And don't worry, no one's going to get, if you want to vote, no one's going to get in the way of you voting. You're
Right.
going to find your way. Don't get too nervous. I've really literally had to call some voters who are so upset and just try to calm them down and say,
Right.
we're going to work this out. It's okay. They got very, very worried in general. There was a level of hysteria that I have never seen before on coming through our help desk, like a vibration. It was akin to the floor falling out from under you.
Right.
Suddenly, everybody felt very insecure and they didn't know where to turn. It was like people needed reassurance. And
Yeah, the
I
postal
just.
system is shutting down. What do you mean? They took the mailbox out of my neighborhood. How do I vote? Right, exactly.
Exactly. And I think the best advice is try to go around them as much as possible. Unfortunately, they cannot assure their service. We're hearing that this is an ongoing problem. And it's not affecting just voting. I mean, the backbone of our country is the post office, the backbone of our economy, checks, all sorts of medical
Yeah.
supplies, many, many things move through the post and contracts, and these are being held up. But what we want you to get your ballot. Now, if you don't get your ballot on time, and you mentioned something about that, what do you do, right? So if you're overseas, you've got the emergency ballot, the federal write-in absentee ballot. That's available to you on the overseas vote site, on the US vote site. You can download that and send it in. So you're set. And I tried very hard to convince people to have that be available to domestic voters, but it's a complex situation and it
Right.
does entail a lot of work for the election officials. So they'd rather not. So what do you do if you're a domestic voter? You requested your ballot and it still didn't arrive. And by the way, absentee balloting is not a last minute affair. I do not recommend it if you're 2 weeks out from the election. Not this year, no.
Right.
Not unless you're going to go to the election office and do the weirdo thing called in-person absentee.
Right.
Yeah,
Like I do.
so let's say you requested your ballot pl in plenty of time and it never arrived. What are you going to do? Well, the first thing I would do is try to get a hold of your election official and see if you can come in and vote there with in-person absentee. If you can't, then you're going to the polls. Now, let's say you just got your ballot really late. You have your absentee ballot, but you don't want to put it in the mail because it's going to be late,
Right,
right? You're
right,
afraid it's going to bring it with you.
right,
Bring it with you to your polling place so they see that you didn't use it,
right.
and then they can check you off and you can vote, okay? So,
Can you
but
hand it to them at that point and say, here's my absentee ballot, my vote by mail ballot, and I wasn't sure that it was going to get back in time. I wanted to bring this to you,
I
either at
think
the polling place or the election board.
there's some election officials that will take it back and have you go through regular polling. Some will have you handed in there. It's right. going, there's so many different variations that are jurisdiction specific, and election right. officials do have to follow a lot of guidelines, and they have a lot of regulations they're coping with, but there is a little, there are some things that are going to vary. So I don't want to be too specific because you might have a different situation occur.
We're going to take a quick break. And when we come back, we want to finish up some more conversation with you about this upcoming election right after this.
Everyone loses golf balls, even the pros. When you need golf balls, go to LostGolfBalls.com, the world's largest inventory of used golf balls. All the top brands in stock, 50% off retail. LostGolfBalls.com.
Okay, we're back. Folks, we can say with all great emphasis that you cannot under any circumstances vote twice.
No, you can't do that. You can request your ballot.
Could you repeat that? No, you cannot vote twice, people.
Let me make a clear distinction here. You can request your ballot as often as you want.
Right.
But you're only going to vote a ballot once.
Right.
So if you're unsure that you requested your ballot and you send in another form, that's not a problem. They know it's you and they're only going to send you one ballot.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
Now, let's say you requested your ballot and it didn't come and you can't bring it with you to the polling place. That's a lousy situation.
You got to go vote in person.
But you got to go vote in person and you're just going to tell them. And they're going to give you, hopefully, a provisional ballot.
A provisional, that's right.
And that's more work for the election officials because they got to wait and see if your other ballot, you know, comes in because they don't know if you're telling the truth or not.
Right, right.
I don't even want to say that.
No, I think it's important for folks to understand. So if you, to Susan's point, make a request for a ballot, you got, I got the form, I did everything, I've sent it in, and the ballot comes back, right? And you fill out the ballot and you mail it, all right? You cannot then go vote. That's despite what you've heard from other sources, you've now voted, all right?
That's right.
Now,
if you really want to risk jail time, give it a try.
Give it a try.
I have recommended that to adventurous people who want to test the system. No, actually, I haven't. I've reminded people over and over again, it's okay to request the ballot more than once, but vote only once.
Right.
And don't test that. That's not that's not going to do you any favors. You could end up in major big trouble because even if you don't know all the different ways that election officials check things out, confirm things, confirm your identity, make sure you're not voting twice, I can assure you they do. They do have methods for this, and we can go down into the weeds on this, but trust me,
you don't want
to do that.
You don't want to do that. But Susan, if I requested a absentee ballot or vote by mail ballot, and election day is tomorrow, and tomorrow comes and I check the mail and it still hasn't come, I go vote that day, you then tell them, because they'll know, because they'll have the records to show that they sent you a ballot.
That's right.
You say, I have not received the ballot. So in that instance, they will then, because now you're on your honor. This is where you got to be. You can't think you're going to cheat the system, because you're going to swear out when they give you that provisional ballot that you have not voted. You have not received your ballot. And if they get back to the office after the election to see that your ballot was returned and you voted, that's when the feds come knocking on the door.
Right. Let's say, here's another scenario. Let's say you didn't get your ballot in time. You couldn't bring it with you to the polling place. It was totally last minute. You just had no ballot and you went to the polling place and you voted a provisional ballot. And then guess what? A few days later, you do get your ballot. You can return that blank with a note and say, I voted a provisional ballot. I'm returning this. I did not use it. We actually recommend that. Ballots, there's a whole system for reconciling those. All ballots have to be accounted for.
Right.
Even the unvoted ballot.
That's important to know.
They know exactly how many ballots didn't come back. They know that. Right. All of those statistics are added up. And that is how an election is certified in the end. I get a question, a certain question I get a lot is how, you know, does my ballot even get counted if I voted absentee from overseas? This happens mm-hmm. a lot, and it's going to happen with domestic voters this year because there are extended ballot receipt deadlines. Let's say the election is in California. The election is November 3rd, just like everywhere else.
Right.
Except maybe Louisiana. We won't go there.
It's Louisiana.
But their ballot, so your ballot has to be postmarked from overseas by November 3rd, but it can be received by November 20th and it will right. still be counted. Now people will say, hey, but it didn't count. Yes, it does. This is a math problem. A race can be called before all ballots are counted because right. the election officials know how many they sent out. They know how many are remaining. And if you can't make up the difference, even if they all come back, they can right. call
yeah.
the race.
You can get every vote that's outstanding and it's still not enough to win. They'll call the
exactly.
race.
Exactly. But right. all of the ballots that arrive at the election office will be counted, and that will make up the certified count. An election has to be certified. The local election officials must certify it. To do that, they legally must count all ballots. And if there, let's say it arrives in California on November 21st, then it goes in the pile of rejected ballots, which also get counted up, right? You want to know how many ballots were rejected because they were late? That's important to know. Now, California didn't have a ballot received by deadline that was quite so long before. I think they have extended it. Most states do have an extended ballot receipt deadline for military and overseas voters. But that doesn't mean that your ballot won't be counted. Now, domestically, some states are going to have that as well. If you want to see these deadlines, just go to our site, go to US or overseas vote, whichever pertains, or just go to US vote and it'll work for everyone. And click into election dates and deadlines or into state voting requirements. Either way, you'll get all your upcoming election dates and deadlines. And they're super complex now. Election deadlines, you would think there's one deadline. No. Because there's so many ways to do things now, you might have one voter registration deadline for sending the registration in on paper. Another one if you did it online. It's very, very common. There's so many multiple ways of doing, taking all these actions now. And, you know, the states are really coping with the fact that they have so many methods for voting. There's the early voting, the polling place voting, the vote by mail voting. It's a lot of work to deal with all that and to make sure it happens all correctly. But for your own good, I mean, try if you can to either vote early with less, people around, or vote by mail just to be safe and to keep the election officials safe.
What is the scheduling like for the early voting piece here? North Carolina is sort of leading out of the gate, I believe, on the 15th or beginning next week.
The 19th,
I think. The 19th, yeah, with early voting, and then a lot of states following after that. The windows on the early voting depend a lot on the individual states. Some have a two-week period, some have a longer period or whatever. But the reality of it is the accessible polling places are a lot smaller. The number of them are a lot fewer. Correct?
That's right. And I was thinking about that today because there's an organization called, or there's a movement or something called Vote Early Day. And I spoke to them early on. I said, I'm not so sure that's a good idea because mm-hmm. it sends the message that voting early is on one day. It's actually not. In most states, it's a range.
Right.
So I'm looking at our early voting dates chart. And right now, if you want to find that, you can go to usvotefoundation.org and just scroll all the way down to the footer. And there you'll see it in the menu of options. We're going to have it as a big banner across the top. But for now, scroll down to the footer and you'll see it in the initiatives column. Now, I'm looking at it right now. Alabama has in-person absentee voting. We have it starting here in September going through October. That's in the election office. I mean, most of the states either have in-person or early voting at a special location. And they have quite a generous set of dates laid out.
Right.
Some less so. I'm looking at Louisiana. It's only a week in October, the 20th to the 27th. But many states have many weeks. Missouri starts September 22nd, goes all the way through to November 2nd. So
early voting in Missouri starts when?
I've got it here as September 22nd, and that's in-person absentee, uh-huh. But it's prior to the election, and you do that at your election office.
So, right up to election day, right up to November 2nd.
Up to the
2nd,
so the wow. day before. New York State starts October 24th through November 1st. New York didn't used to have early voting. They were really, they had a lot of trouble. But most states do have some form of early voting or what they call in-person absentee.
What do we have in Maryland? What's Maryland?
Oh, let's
I gotta
see.
Ask about my home state so I know what I'm doing.
You,
you think I know a chairman of the board here.
Yeah, Monday, October 26th at 7 a.m. through Monday, November 2nd, yep. 8 p.m.
Yep.
So there you go, Maryland voters. And that's at an early voting location.
Right. And they're spread out by county. So that's all on the, you know,
yeah, that's
counties
very
may have
county
two or three
specific.
Key locations, seven or eight key locations, depending on the size of the county. Yeah,
we hope so. And, you know, again, nothing in elections is really the same, not just even state to state, but sometimes jurisdiction to jurisdiction when it comes.
How are you looking at the effort by the NBA, for example, to turn their arenas into vote polling places? Is that something that's driven by the county's board of elections? The states get behind that. Can they do that? What should voters anticipate with that type of effort if it materializes?
Well, I'm not sure on how they're going to do it, but I would have some very strong recommendations that those arenas be in places where there is public transport or that public transport is set up, because you could end up with it being inaccessible simply because of the car and parking and traffic.
Right. And that was the experience recently during when they had a primary, they opened up
I think
up
it
arena.
Was Kentucky, where they
right.
couldn't get the cars in to get there. So it ended up really, the cars were the gating factor, keeping the voters. It was absolutely gruesome. The traffic jam went for hours and hours, and that's
and
terrible.
They eventually had to close the poll, and a lot of people didn't get to vote because they were actually literally stuck outside the arena trying to get in with their car.
Exactly. So anywhere where they're considering doing that, I think Kentucky just did everyone else a favor by
showing them
getting
what can
that
happen
wrong.
With this model.
Right. So whatever, it doesn't matter where a polling place is if you can't get there, even if it's big and beautiful in an arena with plenty right. of facilities, they're really going to have to think about the transport as number one.
How is that? Here's the question though, Susan, because you, when you stop and think about it, you've got this arena where you're hosting 40,000 people for a basketball game, or 70,000 people for football games, say if it's they do something at a stadium. Hello, you get all those cars in. Why was this such a problem?
Actually, I have no idea why this was such a problem. And it might have been because
they actually didn't plan for the level of people to show up and process through.
I really honestly don't know. I only know that it happened, and I should know why. That's a very good question. It would seem to me, and maybe I'm just jaded because I live in Germany and we have public transport that works, but why would you have a big arena with no other options?
Right.
Maybe that's the thing. Maybe during games, people do have other options.
Right.
You wouldn't really necessarily.
I think the warning sign that you put out there is the key thing, that you do have an example of what happens if you don't pay attention to some of the details that go into making these arenas and these locations that are not typical voting places available to the public, who quite honestly, and it may be the situation that, yes, for a basketball game, you've got, you know, a 40,000 seat arena, but you only have out of that number, maybe 15 or 20,000 people are actually drive because they double up their cars. They sort of carpool, and then everybody else is using public transportation. But then on top of that, now of having 40,000 people come to sit in an arena is not the same as having it available to 100,000 people who are going to pass through to vote.
And they're not going to be sitting in those seats next to each other.
That's right.
Where are they going to be? Are they going to have chairs? Are they going to have facilities? Are they going to have refreshments? How do you manage all that?
Well, but even in a voting situation, you're not coming there to party and to linger.
No.
You're actually literally standing in a line to go to a desk to register in and then go to a booth, vote, and leave. So it's not the impact is different. Inside the arena, the impact outside the arena is where all of a sudden now you've doubled the number of people who are coming,
right?
Because they're not coming there to a basketball game; they're coming there to vote, and so you have the potential of doubling the capacity of cars that would come through. And I suspect that's probably what happened. So it is something for those who are looking to work with the NBA, those states looking to work with the NBA to host these type of voting events, that they consider that it's not the problem isn't inside the arena, the problem is outside, because now you're looking at doubling, maybe tripling the number of people who are going to show up to vote as opposed to who would normally show up to go to a game.
And at that point, I really do worry about waiting time and the comfort of the people. It should not be an unbearable physical experience. It really shouldn't be. And that's not good that we make voting so difficult that you have to bring two meals with you and your comfortable shoes and your folding chair and have a friend there to hold your place in line and whatever. And that's just, it's humiliating to people and it's intimidating to not know what you're going to encounter. So they need to think through all of that. We can't have a big arena and a 6-hour wait time that doesn't attend to normal human needs. It's unpleasant. I do think Kentucky served everyone with their the lesson that they learned on that. I also think, you know, I so glibly mentioned public transport, but I would imagine that this whole thing's being done this way to keep people separate and apart. And why are people don't want to hop on a bus together and then spread out in line to vote 6 feet apart to vote?
Well, yeah,
that doesn't make sense either, does it?
It becomes doubly hard for a lot of folks, particularly I know a number of folks in the elderly community, where I grew up in Washington, D.C., where, you know, the local school around the corner was a relatively easy walk for someone who was a senior. But when you now close down that building or, put them in the position in an environment, in a COVID-19 environment, where they're going to be standing in line with a lot of other people, they're going to think twice about that. So we'll have potentially a chilling effect on the ability of voters to access the ballot box, which that should not be the case. You have moved their polling place and now they have to catch a bus to get there. The legislator or the individuals who make that decisions who don't live in that community don't think twice about taking that polling place that's around the corner and moving it, 8 blocks away in the middle of, you know, the beginning of November at night when it's colder and there's COVID-19, you've just disincentivized that voter, that elderly voter, to participate. And that
I'm going to underscore that. Sorry for interrupting.
No, please.
Place-based voting is local voting. And if you're going to move it away and it requires transport to get there, you're adding a barrier to many, many, many people.
Right.
If people can't walk there, ride their bike there, if it's a long time to get there, if they have to park, if it's too much. You're adding a layer of complexity. I really think what we should be doing is, rather than looking for giant arenas where we put all the people in there and try to cope with it in that way, we should be looking for larger local facilities. If it means closing school down for a day, it means closing school down for a day. Have more and larger local facilities. That's how you get participation. Moving it far away, that you need a car to get to, that is a recipe for disenfranchisement.
Susan, you have been phenomenal in the information and certainly in the work that you are providing the public at the U.S. Vote Foundation. Certainly it's always and has been a pleasure to work with you and to learn from you and to watch you do what you've done for 16, 17 years now. It's just really important work, and I appreciate you taking time. I know it's late for you in Germany at this hour, and you've got a lot going on, so I appreciate it. I hope our listeners do as well, the insights you bring to the table. So thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you to Michael for your service to our foundation as chairman. It's made all the difference. And thank you to the listeners. Happy voting, everyone. You're going to vote. Nothing's getting in your way. Promise me.
Absolutely. That is a promise for sure that we're all going to adhere to. And again, go to the website, folks. It's usvotefoundation.org, usvotefoundation.org. It is a one-stop shop for all your voting questions, needs, information. It's a springboard into your state, and you can really figure out what you need to do beginning literally next week. As early voting begins around the country, don't sleep on this. Take advantage of it, because as we like to say at the foundation, every citizen is a voter, and make sure that you are prepared to do what you should do as a citizen, and that is vote. So that'll do it for this week, folks. Thanks again for dropping in for a few to chat with Susan at the U.S. Vote Foundation. Don't forget to check us out on iTunes. Certainly Spotify, you can download the podcast. Share this podcast, because this is information every voter needs, every citizen needs to know exactly what they need to do come now and on November 3rd. Thanks, guys. Catch y'all later. Take care. And wear the damn mask.
Your local Health Mart pharmacy is putting the personal care back in healthcare. We know you by name, not by refill number. Visit healthmart.com for the location near you. Health Mart, caring for you and about you.
Everyone loses golf balls, even the pros. When you need golf balls, go to lostgolfballs.com, the world's largest inventory of used golf balls. All the top brands, in stock, 50% off retail. LostGolfBalls.com.
Sally from finance loves fly fishing. She used to spend her weekend surrounded by receipts. Then she switched her company to Ramp. Now, spend is all under control, all in one place. Her team submits their expenses with a text, and she can close the books without all the busy work. So Sally's weekends are all her own, surrounded by fish, not receipts. Switch your business to Ramp.com and love finance again.